welcome to another epically awesome edition of the Cybersecurity Matters podcast. I am your co-host, Dominic Vogel, and joining me, as always, but joining me separately in our recording studio is Mr. Christian Redshaw. Christian, how are you doing today?
It's good to be out of the house and in the studio today. I'm feeling good. Get some fresh air.
Who is our awesome guest that that we're going to be talking to today?
Well, she has a great name. Her name is Stacy Champagne, and she represents the Trade Secrets Network, as well as her passion project, which is called Hacker in Heels. So I'm looking forward to finding out what that's all about.
This should be a really cool conversation, so stay tuned, everyone. We'll take a momentary pause here, bring Stacy in, and we'll have a great conversation with her.
Let's do it. Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to Cybersecurity Matters. We have Stacy Champagne as our guest today. Stacy, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Pleasure.
Stacy, thank you. Like Christian was saying, we really appreciate you joining us. And maybe for getting started here, maybe you could tell our listeners and viewers just a little bit about yourself, how you came into the career of cybersecurity, and a little bit of about your journey to date.
Sure. So it's a little bit of an interesting story, but as you know, many people have experience with cybersecurity. A lot of people who have gotten their start in the field have pretty non-traditional, unexpected pathways in. So for me, I was a visual information specialist in the intelligence community and had the opportunity to pursue a graduate degree and have it funded. And so I decided to make a career pivot into cybersecurity and broke into the private sector, started out as a cybersecurity process engineer, and then found my way into the specialization of insider threat. So I've been an insider threat now for quite a few years. I've worked my way up through those positions. I've been an insider threat analyst, a technical investigator, and a program manager. And then I've furthered my passions and experiences through, working in your typical corporate jobs, corporate cybersecurity teams in the financial services sector. I've then, seized the entrepreneur side of me to go ahead and create two organizations, one of them being the Trade Secrets Network, which is really focused on leveling up conversations around insider threats. So insider threat is still pretty new to the private sector, and a lot of the industry groups, we spend time talking through the basics, right? But there's a certain cadre of insider threat practitioners that have some intermediate advanced experience, whether they're coming from the government or whether they just simply nerd out on the stuff. And so I put together a group to really talk through some of those more pressing challenges, more nitty-gritty sticky challenges on a regular cadence, and help each other improve our programs. The other initiative is Hacker in Heels, and that is to introduce more women into cybersecurity. Our mission is essentially to help women achieve six-figure careers in cybersecurity. So that is achieved through courses, content, and community. And ultimately, we believe that cybersecurity careers can be one of the best avenues for disrupting the inequities of wealth and power in society.
Absolutely. Well, that's such a interesting background, and the things that you discussed, I think now we you've opened the doors for a lot of conversation now to evolve over the next 20 minutes. So let's start with the insider threats, because we've never had someone on the show that's really been an expert in that area. It's actually a topic we've never really unfolded before. So maybe just from a starting position, why is it that so much of the commentary around cybersecurity is often focused on the external threat, whether it be the nation state hackers or the cyber criminal organizations? The insider threat, especially with smaller organizations or the SMB market, doesn't tend to get the airplay that the big focus of the external threats does. So my question is, A, why is that? And B, what do we need to do to start changing that narrative?
Yeah, so I think the external threat is easy to rally around, right? It's, someone who potentially has no affiliation to our organization that is trying to do harm to us. That is so much easier to grapple with than going through the experience of having someone who is one of your own doing things that could potentially compromise your company, especially in organizations where everyone is thought to be family. You know, everyone is expected that, you know, on a high level, they're promoting all these positive values. And then, you know, down in the weeds, you're experiencing situations where people, you know, are experiencing stressors that are influencing them to take adverse action against their organizations. And these stressors could be something that is truly external. It could be, you know, a financial situation at home. It could be, you know, interpersonal stress outside of the workplace, but it can also be many things that are in the workplace too, right? It could be bad manager, bad leadership, you know, an unfair performance management practice. And these are all things that are really difficult and hard to, you know, put ourselves in the mirror and look, you know, critically at what we are doing to foster this kind of behavior in our organizations, because that's ultimately what it leads to, right? Technology, when it comes to insider threat, is really an enabler of behaviors that are inspired by other things, other stressors, other situations. And so it's just a more complicated challenge that, you know, a lot of companies are trying and they're starting and then they're ending up in these really uncomfortable situations. And they're kind of saying, okay, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to see that stuff anymore. I don't want to look at this. You know, let's go back to focusing on the external, because there's no debate about that there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. For sure. And one more sidebar question to that, and then I'm hogging the mic and I'll Christian in here. But when we're talking about maybe foundational building blocks, you know, how does an organization start building the sort of insider threat or being able to respond to and detect insider threat capabilities? Sort of walk me through maybe the procedural and maybe technology foundational elements that organizations should start looking at or investing in.
Yeah, so my favorite approach is to start with use cases. So figure out what are the use cases that are applicable to your organization that you're concerned about based off of how you operate your business and everything. There are use cases that are applicable pretty much to any organization. And one that can give you a quick win is usually your departing employees. Statistics show, studies show that, you know, 2/3 and more take something when they go to leave a company. And so that's usually your best bet for being able to detect potential data exfiltration events. So looking not just in the 2 weeks that they've given you notice for, but also in the previous 90 days, any activity that could have happened. And you detect that activity by looking at a variety of channels, right? And some of the technologies you might already have in your organization today. So if you have ways to look at email, if you have ways to look at chat, if you have ways to look at web browsing, and if they're accessing, you know, any sort of cloud storage solutions that could be accessible from the outside, trying to watch for all those channels of anything that's being sent externally by those people who have been identified as leavers is a good place to start and have some conversation. Now, that being said, there's also a lot of nuance in doing that kind of monitoring, right? Like, someone is leaving the organization. Oftentimes, again, going back to that family trust, you know, work-life blend mentality, you've got people who they use their work computer for personal stuff. And so you're going to see them start to send high volumes of data out. And it could just be that they're sending photos of their dog, you know, that they got onto their computer because they were sharing them on Facebook, that they also access on their work computer and everything. And so it's a tricky balancing act of, you know, trying to watch for these insider threat behaviors and also just be mindful of strategies really that you can help filter out that unintentional insider threat, like the person trying to, you know, send home personal, like truly personal data and such as they're trying to leave the company.
Sure.
That's really like one of the best places to start.
So before we get any further, I just wanted to address the difference there, and you alluded to it with the unintentional insider. So probably a lot of your focus is on people who are trying to do things maliciously and the different motivations for that, but there's also that unintentional side as well. Can you share with the viewers kind of what the typical scenarios would be? How do you delineate between those two categories?
Yeah, so I usually like to break this up into three kind of excuses that the unintentional gives. So I didn't know, which is that I didn't know that I wasn't supposed to do whatever it is that I just did. It could also be I didn't have, you know, my work computer. I didn't have some sort of material or technology to be able to do the job it was that I needed to do to get my work done. And then similarly, the third excuse is there wasn't a way. There wasn't a way for me to do this process that I needed to do. And therefore, I did this other thing. I installed this other software or whatnot to be able to, again, get the job done. Unintentional insider threats, it's usually like because they're trying to do something, and oftentimes it's technology or process mm-hmm. or something getting in the way of them mm-hmm. being able to achieve whatever it is they need for their job. And so that's really how I focus on unintentional and try to organize efforts around that, is really kind of mitigating those excuses.
Mm-hmm. So just at its really basic level, the unintentional insider is someone doing something largely by mistake. It's more mm-hmm. of a negligence versus somebody who is trying to exfiltrate important information and do things maliciously to harm the organization on the other side.
Right.
So it just feels to me like a lot of this is a cultural issue. Would you agree with that in terms of the leadership and the setting the tone? How much does the culture of a company factor in to the insider threat?
Culture is huge. I always like to say that your focus as an insider threat program, an ultimate insider threat program, if it was truly doing what it needed to be doing, it would be rallying as an organization to instill vigilance and loyalty in its people. Vigilance in that your people are informed to be able to look out for the things that, you know, are concerning, that they shouldn't be doing, that's trying to target them and whatnot, and the loyalty that when those situations come up, when they're experiencing a stressor in their life, they act in the interest of the company and not for, you know, self-motivational gains. The best example of this is what happened with the Tesla employee a couple weeks ago, right, where they were approached by someone with an offer to plug in a removable media device and install some malware in order to then gain, like, I think it was $500,000 or something. And that employee was basically like, you know, I care about the company and everything more than this opportunity to make some significant money. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to go back and I'm going to know who to report it to, what to do in this situation and everything. And that's the ultimate goal of any insider threat program, is when people are so far to the left of boom, they know exactly what to do and they don't end up on what we call the critical path, you know, mm-hmm. working towards taking that action against the company. It could have been a different story. He could have been, you know, it could be COVID time. He could be struggling with his finances, with his family or whatnot. And then someone comes along and offers some money. I mean, it sounds like, you know, serendipitous, right? But it chose to take a different path.
Yeah, it's interesting because, I mean, we've run into a scenario recently where we've discovered some insider activity that wasn't necessarily a financial motivation to harm the company, but more of a self-promotion motivation to try to work their way up into the company. So it's such an interesting world we live in, and I would imagine your daily life is not boring, to say the least. Cybersecurity may be seen as boring, but the stories behind it, there's probably limitless stories that you could tell us about specific scenarios that you've seen.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, at the end of the day, it's a people challenge. It's really, you know, cybersecurity is kind of like a false lead on the challenge that we have here. We're really hurting people and teaching people at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And shifting gears slightly now, Stacey, I'd love to learn a bit more about the Hacker in Heels organization that you mentioned there, and how important it is to increase, specifically here, gender diversity in what's traditionally been a very white male dominated industry, being cybersecurity. I mean, getting that level of diversity is important to be able to take the cybersecurity industry from where it is to where it should be. We need to have greater diversity of thought and experience and gender. Explain to me, you know, in terms of the current roadblocks, how do we make sure that we keep having positive momentum in changing that narrative and making sure that women are given equal opportunity and that they are given an opportunity in any role and that they choose, rather than having traditionally been pigeonholed into maybe a sales or marketing role? How do we make sure that, again, that old male patriarchy can go by the wayside, and you know how we actually create something new into the future? And I think, again, it's amazing to have the organization that you started there. I just realized I didn't really ask a question. I'm sort of rambling, but in terms of being able to, just like I said, change that narrative, what needs to be done?
Yeah. So, you know, a lot of organizations talk about this pipeline problem, right? It's that there's not enough women that are interested in cybersecurity. So let's put all of our efforts into our K-12 school systems and our colleges and universities and try to attract more women in through that way. Now, the problem is that we've got all these organizations throwing all this money and resource at this, you know, beginning part of the pipeline, and we're not looking further down the path. Because these women are getting into these companies, into their first jobs, into their roles, and they're experiencing, you know, bias, misogyny, and just, you know, terrible treatment by both men and women in the field that drives them almost in this revolving door type fashion back out of the industry. I was reviewing a study the other day. This was more geared towards women in tech in general, but just the fact that majority of women leave at the midpoint of their careers in tech because of the lack of opportunity, the treatment, and the lack of flexibility and such. And so, you know, really taking time, just like I talked about with insider threat, right? With taking time to look at ourselves in the mirror, look at how we're, you know, either advancing or, you know, actively roadblocking women's advancement with our programs or lack thereof, and addressing those things and looking at, okay, well, you know, what is our performance management process? Is it truly objective or is it subjective? Is it the person who's the loudest in the room or has the most influential manager getting the higher, you know, the promotional slots? And how do we change that? And the best part is that when we try to advocate for women in cybersecurity, we're actually doing a service to everybody in cybersecurity, because the things that keep women down, they also, you know, have an impact on all genders and everyone's, you know, ability to be assessed fair and equitably. So, you know, really looking at not just, okay, we got them in the door, we're good, done, pat on the back, you know, we'll keep reaching down in that pipeline and try to get like a bunch of women in here. It's what are you doing with them and what are you doing to them when they're in the company to actually get them to, you know, help them rise in the ranks, to give them the opportunity, to give them a training and whatnot.
Absolutely. I guess that's where the inclusion part comes into the equation. I mean, the diversity is one mm-hmm. thing, but as you aptly pointed out there, if the situation isn't the same, or if they're just there as token diversity hires, nothing is really changing. There's got to be, like you mentioned there, that focus on the equity and inclusion as well, in order to truly make this a benefit for everyone. And that was really well pointed out as well, Stacey, that this isn't just about increasing gender equality. It's about, even just looking at it from the perspective of the cybersecurity industry, this is about elevating our industry. Now, I've been in this industry for close to 20 years, and one of the first things I remember when I entered was that it was all pissed off middle-aged white guys. And the irony is not lost on me that I'm now become a pissed off middle-aged white guy. But, you know, it's important to be able to realize that many of those same problems we were dealing with 25 years ago, we're still dealing with now. We haven't solved the problems like patch management or a lot of these same problems. Why? It's because it's the cybersecurity ranks are still very much dominated by white male IT people with that type of background. When you bring that different level of diversity in, that will allow us to collectively raise the industry as a whole to new heights. So I think it's absolutely awesome that the organizations like Hacker and Heels is out there. So for our listeners and viewers who want to learn more about that organization, what's the best way that they can get in contact?
Yeah, so visiting the website, hackerinheels.com, also following on Instagram. We are wrapping up our first ever beta of what we've called the Changemakers Program, and that is focused on, you know, I mentioned the K-12 pipeline, but also finding women, to your point around diversity of thought, women who are in different fields currently, like how I was starting out as a visual information specialist. How can we take women that already have, you know, corporate experience, potentially other working experience, and then harness what they've learned and what they've applied there, then to bring it over to cybersecurity? So the Changemakers Program just ran it for 6 weeks, introducing women to all the different knowledge, skills, education opportunities, roles, and whatnot. We'll be running that again next year. And so going on the website, signing up to be notified about that is a good idea.
Awesome. So Stacey, that was an absolutely epic conversation. Christian and I are very appreciative of you joining us today. Thank you again so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Stacey. And Dominic and I will be right back to wrap things up.
That was such an engaging conversation. It was really interesting that, you know, we've never actually had someone on the podcast talking about insider threats before. So I think it was really interesting for our viewers and listeners to be able to get some really great insights in terms of what insider threats means to various organizations and what that threat represents. So very appreciative of Stacey taking time to join us today. What were your takeaways there, Christian?
For sure, yeah. It was our first insider threat practitioner. And I love the category, and it's a threat that often is not thought of because we're thinking about hackers and cyber criminal networks. We're not thinking about what's right under our nose with the malicious insiders who have various motivations, as well as the accidental insiders that are doing things they shouldn't be doing, but not on purpose. And I think really what stood out to me is when she talked in that demographic about excuses. I didn't know could be a category. I didn't have something that I needed, or there just wasn't a way. I thought that summed it up very perfectly. And also helps point us to how we can resolve those insider threats, at least from the accidental side of things.
That was such a great conversation with Stacey, and we're very grateful for her for taking time out of her day to join us. And in that air of gratitude, we want to make sure that we give a special thanks to our loyal listeners and viewers for taking time out of their day to join us on this podcast. Please make sure that you check out previous episodes at the Conversations That Matter YouTube page, as well as other podcasts that fly under that family banner. As always, until next time, be well, be safe, mask up, and we'll catch you next time on the Cybersecurity Matters podcast show.